Money FM 89.3, best of weekends.
Joanna Lumley's Unseen Adventures premieres Thursday, the 10th of December, 9 p.m. on BBC Earth, StarHub Channel 407. Our very own Neil Humphreys had the chance to do an exclusive interview with her the other day. They skirted off in a dark corner of the internet and talked with each other about things that only two people from the UK would understand or truly appreciate, which is why I wasn't in on the interview. Neil, set up this taped interview for us.
Well, firstly, let me just say she was wonderful. She was just wonderful. I think she's now 74 years old, full of zest, full of curiosity, full of wonder. She was just one of the most insightful, erudite raconteurs I have ever spoken to. We had about 20 minutes. I could have spoken to her easily for 2 hours. And her revelations about Singapore genuinely stunned me.
Let's listen to the interview now in its entirety. Those of you at home, have a good listen, and then we'll come back afterward and we'll talk about it. Neil with Joanna.
Hello, Joanna Lumley. Welcome to Money FM in Singapore.
Oh, Neil, thank you so much. And my heart has literally sprung across the world to be with you.
No, I have to say this. It is genuinely my privilege and my honour. And I'll explain why a little bit later. But first, for the benefit of our Singaporean listeners, I mean, you are a presenter, an author, a TV producer, an activist, a former model. You've won two BAFTAs for your role as Patsy Stone in Absolutely Fabulous. That's two British Academy Awards. You have a BAFTA fellowship. And forgive me for saying it, but you are 74 years old. You've had a wonderfully full and varied career. Why don't you just retire? What is it? What is it that keeps you hitting the road?
You know, Neil, it's the funniest thing, because I'm married to a musician. He's a classical musician, and he conducts operas and composes and plays the piano and keyboard and so on. And we both talked to each other and said, what should we retire? And he said, what I do is like breathing. If I stop doing it, I'll die. I thought, that's pretty much the same as me. I've never considered what I do work. It's what I absolutely adore doing, acting, presenting, doing commentaries, helping causes which I possibly can. The idea of just not doing it, what would I do? I'd be press my nose to the window, looking out, envious of everybody in the world. So I'm just going to go on till I fall down in a little pile of dust, I think.
Well, that's wonderful. I mean, your new TV series coming here shortly on BBC, Joanna's Unseen Adventures. Of course, this show compiles unseen stories, behind-the-scenes shots of your very successful travelogues across Japan, Silk Road, and, of course, the Trans-Siberian Adventure. But I've noticed, and what we're proud to see, Joanna, is there's a very heavy emphasis on Asia in your series. I mean, what is it about Asia that you find so compelling?
Well, I was born in Kashmir and just before the partition of India. And so we left there when I was not even a year old. And straight after that, my father, who was a soldier and he served with the Gurkha regiments, was posted to Hong Kong. And then we were posted to what is now Malaysia, Malaya. And so all my young life really was spent in what we call from here the Far East. And it sort of got under my skin, because they say that, you know, you can give somebody a child until the age of seven, and then after that you can hand them back the man. So all your development, I think, is before you're 7 years old or about then. And I was eight when I came back to live in the UK. Wow. And so I think I inhaled a lot of the East. And everything that I love seemed to start with, well, funny enough, it started in Singapore, because that's where all our troop ships came and docked. Mm. And even if we were going round to Hong Kong, we'd stop at Singapore. And so it was pivotal in my life.
That's wonderful. I mean, so can you remember roughly what years you were in Singapore and what memories do you have of the place?
Well, we would have come to Singapore first in about 1948, travelling through, and I've got photographs of me as a little girl with some friends who had the most wonderful address. I think it's gone now forever. It was 40 Stevens Road, Singapore, finish, the world, the universe, you know.
The road is still there. The road is still there. It's not far from where I live now. Stevens Road is a main thoroughfare. Yeah, Stevens Road essentially leads to Orchard Road, which is our major shopping district in Singapore.
Oh, my God. Well, Neil, they used to have a hugely long garden, and I think when I went back to visit them in the 80s, the big motorway had gone through what used to be their very long garden, but the house was there, and I could remember it even as a tiny child. But every time we went through, I was there for a little bit when I was in 1948. I would have gone again in 1951. I'd have gone again in 1954. I'd have gone again in 1950. So all the time dipping in and out of Singapore, Aubun Hall Gardens, you know, the Tiger Balm Gardens, which were in those faraway days as exotic and thrilling. And there was a beautiful lead or bronze statue of a horse. And my sister, we've got a photograph of her up on the horse looking very brave when she was about 4 years old. But I, at 2 years old, was put on it and I cried my eyes out.
I mean, do you have memories of Singapore's gradual evolution? I mean, like you said, you went in the 50s. Obviously, then it was still a British colony. Did you get back after 1965, post-independence?
Yeah, I got back in the 1980s. I wrote a piece for one of the magazines, which was about Somerset Maugham's stories about the Far East. And he was in Singapore and Malaysia and in Borneo. And so using his stories from the 30s, my childhood memories of the 50s, and then returning in the 80s, I was sort of looking at and seeing what had changed, what had stayed the same. And of course, Singapore is now utterly different from when I was there as a child, utterly different and absolutely dazzling. But I couldn't remember so many tall buildings and so many made up roads, as it were. And you've got one small street, which is like little Chinatown or whatever you call it, which was how it used to be when I was there. And that's how the whole of Singapore was in the old days, except for a few grand, railway stations, because we came down from Kuala Lumpur on the train to come to Singapore, overnight train, and come in at Singapore Station.
Yes, the station is still there. Yes, the station is still there, but it's been protected and it's now heritage listed. Yeah. So
honestly, this is all imprinted in my memory. And then, of course, the Great Harbour with all its islands and all the busyness of the ships, a sensational place. And I wonder if that wasn't because I was born, as it were, in a suitcase, travelling always. So I've always felt at ease travelling. The thought of packing up and moving on fills me with joy and excitement. But looking out over Singapore Harbour, and the boats coming and the boats going and everything going, it seemed to be the hub of the world, where everything from there, you could go to anywhere.
That's extraordinary. I never realized that Singapore played such a pivotal role in your love of Asia and your love of travel.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Well, I mean, so you've got this new series and it's broken down into three episodes. Predominantly in Asia, as I mentioned. The first episode takes us from Japan to Siberia. Mm. And what are some of the highlights of that particular journey? What can we look out for in that episode?
Well, first of all, I should explain that whenever we do these travelogues, we overshoot. We don't mean to, but we just do. There's just too much to fit into the programmes, which are an hour-long programme. And so you're bound to have some chapters, as it were, some sequences, which literally can't be fitted in. And during this lockdown, we thought, this is awful. We've got all these fabulous pieces of film. And we thought, well, let's put them into Unseen Adventures and also tell a few of the stories behind. What I was thrilled to see in Japan, one of the stories which we'd specially done and then couldn't fit in, was what I would call the cherry blossom expert man. Mm. He was absolutely fascinating. And to travel, you know, I'm sure you know that in Japan they have a sort of weather forecast for cherry blossoms. So it's a cherry blossom forecast. They have a map of Japan showing where it's in bud, where it's in full blossom, where it's just over. So you know where to go out and have your picnic under the trees with your family. And we went to meet him, and what he told me, he had such a wise and utterly charming, I felt so at home with him. And it was odd because he was older than I am. He was a man who lived right across the other side of the world. We couldn't speak each other's language. But I felt completely in harmony with him because of our love of trees and his knowledge of the trees and life and how to treat trees. He said, treat them like children. And I was so moved by that, really. It was extraordinary.
It is one of the wonderful things about Japan when you go during the cherry blossom season, when families of all generations will put picnics out in the streets, in the parks, and they'll sit beneath these stunning cherry blossom trees. And it's just for a couple of weeks of every year. It's glorious, isn't it?
It's gorgeous. It's a kind of religious observance. And so I'm sure all different countries have different. We're just about to come over here into the kind of Christmas season. And so the shops already, because of the epidemic, I've tried to cheer people up by everything is full of Santa's sleighs and reindeers, snow and robins, everything, because it becomes a season of something. And the season of cherry blossom is something so respectful of nature and so reveling in the beauty. And also this quite wise old thought that nothing lasts forever. You know, it's sort of gather ye rosebuds while ye may. It will come back, but it won't come back this year. So just do it now, you know, carpe diem.
Yes, I agree. I love that aspect of the Japanese cherry blossom season, this idea that of rebirth. It's new, it's refreshed, this spring mindset to life, you know, that we have to cherish what we have and appreciate it while it's here.
That's absolutely right. And it's so different because, as far as I can remember, in Singapore and Malaysia, and that includes Sarawak and Borneo, there's no cherry blossom there. But what I remember of the flowers when I grew up were the white moon flowers, the Ipomea alba, which come out and bloom for one night only, smelling of lemons, and hibiscus hedges, and of course, canna lilies everywhere. And everything just, you know, the tangles of jungly and the rubber trees, everything, it's imprinted in my mind because it was my home. It was home. I always thought of that as home. And sometimes when I wake up in the early mornings, I still think of myself in the Far East.
That's extraordinary. That is utterly extraordinary. That's absolutely made my day, Joanna. I have to say that. I really have to say that. I didn't realize it left such an imprint on the young Joanna Lumley. That's wonderful. Yeah. Okay, so we're moving on. Episodes two take us into India and Uzbekistan. Any particular memories that stand out for you there?
Well, in Uzbekistan, I was taken aback by this extraordinary way of manufacturing sapphires. I mean, I suppose, again, it's back to the wonders of nature, how things that we then treat as very precious are actually made. So we dig diamonds up and we go, oh, my God, and diamonds are the most valuable things in the world. Emeralds are very fragile and so on. But the fact that you can make sapphires by kind of forcing stuff together, it absolutely blew my mind. And these enormous sapphires that can be created and used either for industrial purposes or cut up and sold. It's rather like cultured pearls, I suppose, in that you work out how they're made, as you do with a pearl. You put a little grain of sand into an oyster shell, and then you realize how the nacre, or the nacre, forms around it. And with this, you work out that by compressing zinc or whatever it was, you can make it into these fabulous sapphires. So I absolutely adored that. The fact that they gave them different names, I don't know, Swiss blue and London. And London was rather grey, I noticed. rather grey. And that's fair enough for the rain we have. But I was absolutely taken aback by that.
And moving on to the episode that I am particularly looking forward to, because I have a fascination with Cuba, takes in Iran to Cuba. So you've got two very fascinating cultures there, from the Middle East over into Cuba. What stood out there for you?
Well, in Iran, I mean, the whole of Iran, Neil, it was very, very difficult. We'd been trying for 5 years. We'd applied for permits to film in Iran for 5 years. And we kept on being turned down, No matter how courteously how professionally we showed ourselves to be, they wouldn't have us. And then suddenly, I think it was when President Trump reneged from one of the nuclear deals that Britain and Germany and France had signed with the US, with Iran, and he pulled out of it. And I think they terribly wanted to show friendliness to other countries. They quickly said to us, I think we were filming in either Uzbekistan or Kyrgyzstan, we got a message through saying, you can come to Iran tomorrow. And we said, well, we can't be there tomorrow, but we'll be there as soon as we can. So we had no recce, we had nothing except our dreams of what it would be like. We got our visas, and I had a photograph taken with all my hair absolutely covered, beautifully masked in my scarves and veils. And off we went to Iran, not really knowing except what we dreamed we would see. And they could not have been kinder to us. They gave us two wonderful fixers, as we call them, dragomen. And these were a film producer and a film director who happened to be free for us at the time. And they took me to a place I wanted to see more than anything in the world, practically. I would say that about everywhere. But it was the tomb of Cyrus the Great, the most beautiful, simple, fabulous monument to this enlightened ruler who, even though he was sort of 2,500 years before the present time, when he'd conquered somewhere, he'd say, all the slaves must be set free, all prisoners must be set free, women and men must be treated equally, all religions should be tolerated and encouraged, all the temples and places of worship that have been smashed must be restored and rebuilt. And his speech that he made is actually kept in the UN building in New York. It's called the Scroll of Cyrus or something, because his wise, wise words go on echoing down through the centuries.
Extraordinary.
So to stand there, Neil, I can't tell you. You know, half of the things I do in my life, I stand there pinching myself, going, is this real? Is this real? Am I really here? Are these dreams really coming true?
But listening to you, Joanna, you retain that almost childlike curiosity of the young girl in Southeast Asia. You know, you're That's still true. So enthusiastic about culture, heritage, history. I mean, how, as a 74-year-old woman, how do you retain that effervescence? I mean, you clearly show that age is just a number. You
know, I think
why
age
is so important to you to get out, to have your adventures and explore, no matter what age you are?
I think the truth is that you don't realise this really until you get a bit older, that you actually only have one go at this life in this present form, i.e. in the body that you've got and the mind you've got. And so this is all there is. This is the party. This is the adventure. So for goodness sake, don't sit down and go, I'm bored, or I don't know what to do, or waste your time on things that you know are frivolous and boring and not productive. The world is full of the most fascinating things you will ever know, and things that never have been found out. So the depth of the ocean and the height of the stars, and then the miraculous diversity of our world, it can never fail. Now, it's like anything. If you just have a little bit, it's addictive. If you just have a little bit of travel, just go off the beaten track a bit. Beautiful hotels are lovely, but get out of that beautiful hotel. Put on your walking shoes and walk. Take a bus. Don't even ask where it goes. If you don't speak the language, just say to the bus driver by miming it, can you put me off somewhere? And then just try to sort of work your way out where you are and smile at people. I always feel terribly humbled traveling in the world because people are so generous. And Neil, I've discovered that no matter how far we go and how different we look and how remote people live, how remote their lives are from our own, how strange their language, how different their religions, we are all exactly the same underneath the skin. Apart from the governments and the administrations which make our countries seem so different ideologically, underneath, all of us are the same. We want our children to do well. We want our homes to be safe. We want to be friends with our friends and to work hard. We want to dance and play. We want to eat good food. We want to protect ourselves. We want to make advances in science. We're all the same. We have different luck. We have different climates. So some places are a desert. Some are a wilderness of snow. Some are flooded every year. Some fortunate ones grow good fruit and trees. But we've got to protect this earth. And we've got to protect each other and try to learn about each other. And even if you can't speak the language, a smile goes a long, long way.
So inspirational. I couldn't agree more. We are all the same, except in one aspect. Only one of us is Patsy Stone from Absolutely Fabulous. So can Patsy Stone just jump on a bus anywhere she likes?
Patsy, actually, Neil, doesn't really know what a bus is. Patsy's used to being driven about in cars. No, she couldn't do it. But strangely enough, people have seen Patsy across the world. And I, of course, look very different because unless I've got my hair up and I'm smoking a cigarette and I've got a glass of something in my hand, I don't really look like Patsy. When people talk to me in the street, they talk to me as Joanna, not as Patsy. But gosh, I love playing her. It was one of the funniest and happiest times of my life.
Oh, wonderful. Look, I have to ask you this finally, because I'll never forgive myself if I didn't. You were in one of my favorite TV shows as a child.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite movies, the favorite movie you can guess, but could you guess the favorite TV show just out of curiosity?
I wondered if it was Sapphire and Steel.
It was.
Well, Neil.
I loved Sapphire and Steel as a kid. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was a brilliant show. I was the right age. I was almost sort of 9, 10 years old. I thought it was wonderful. And I had to tell you that.
It was quite scary too. It was quite dark. It didn't patronize children. It had deaths and ghosts and frightening people who disappeared from photographs and lost children and vengeful animals who'd been killed. It was a very strange and fascinating little, and I did that with David McCallum, who's still alive. Yeah. We're still in touch with each other. And I wonder if the best film was Wolf of Wall Street.
Well, I do like Wolf of Wall Street, yes. And you have that wonderful scene with Leonardo DiCaprio, of course.
But was it otherwise on Her Majesty's Secret Service?
Yes, it is the best James Bond film by far. You played one of Blofeld's Angels of Death. It also starred, of course, George Lazenby, who made St. Jack in Singapore. So there's a connection there. I have to ask, what was it like being in the greatest James Bond movie ever made?
Well, I'm so thrilled you say that, because I wondered if it was just because I was in it and knew it so well that I think it's pretty much the greatest too. For some reason, it's very serious. The fact that he gets married and she's killed in the very end. You never have seen a James Bond film like that. Secondly, the story is riveting. But to be in a Bond film, Neil, I can't tell you what it's like. It was like magic. It was like joining the biggest circus on earth. We went up to Switzerland, where I think the company Eon bought a village virtually for 6 months and said, nobody comes in, nobody goes out. And so we just lived in it like a Bondorama. And we there were no cars up there, so we travelled either on foot to the cable cars and the rick-rack railways. We went by sleigh when the snow had come down. And we were, as you say, Blofeld's Angels of Death. Blofeld was Telly Savalas. Mm. And he could not have been a more frightening and smooth and deadly Blofeld. And the girls, we were represented people from all nations, because we were going to spread germ warfare when we got back from having been treated in his terrible clinic. And I don't think I've ever loved anything more. It was very early on in my career. We were out there for 2 whole months as autumn, October turned into November, turned into December, in the beauty of the Bernese Oberland, where the skies were blazing blue, vast white mountains, the Eiger, the Mönch, the Jungfrau, right opposite us. It was magic. Everybody was so kind. And what I love, Neil, is that I used to watch the technicians, the lighting cameraman, the people swinging the lenses on the camera. And I would ask, what is this lens for? What is that? And so find out more about the business I was in. Why do you use that light there, you know?
And was it your film debut in 1969?
No, I'd done one, which was my very first film was just to get me an equity card. And I only had to say one line. And that one line was, yes, Mr. Robinson. Then I was in the film. I think it was my second film. That's what it was, my second ever film. You couldn't get a better second film, could you, Neil?
Oh, it's fabulous. Well, here we are 50 years later and you're still traveling the world. You're an absolute inspiration to me. It's been an absolute joy having you on Money FM today. Thank you so much, Joanna Lumley. And I wish you the best of luck with Joanna's Unseen Adventures. Thank you so much.
Neil, thank you so much. Trima Cassie, thank you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.